You're listening to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Hi everyone, Paul here, and just a quick message from me to let you know that if you are looking to improve the performance of your team, no matter whether it is a work, sporting or community one, then we've developed some tools to help. On the website, you will find our Thriving Teams Diagnostic, which uses insights from the more than 200 great coaches we have interviewed to challenge you with a series of questions to help you understand how your team is performing. It's free and only takes a few minutes to complete. If you'd like to know more, you can check out our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast.
To me, being perfect is not about that scoreboard out there.
This is a chance of a lifetime.
When you can understand the person, you can then work towards a common goal.
We are all on the same team.
Know your role and do it to the best of your ability.
Focus on the fundamentals. We've gone over time and time again.
Your defense has got to be better.
Leave no doubt tonight.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
Hello and welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast, where we believe that there is no algorithm for leadership. And so we interview great sports coaches from around the world to try and find ideas to help all of us be better leaders. Our great coach on this episode is Kelly Sheffield. Kelly is an American volleyball coach. He started coaching in his teens, helping out at summer camps. He then went on to assist at high school level before getting his chance as an assistant at the University of Houston in 1997. He was then given his first head coaching role at the University of Albany in 2001 and led them to 3 regular season championships. In 2012, he was appointed as head coach of the University of Wisconsin and has led them to 5 Big Ten championships, 4 NCAA Final Fours, and the 2021 NCAA championship. Some of the highlights of our discussion were his view on the importance of his team's environment, where they try to teach life lessons at a critical time in people's lives. The way he talks about balancing optimism and positivity against just cheerleading, and the story he shares about rubber wristbands to illustrate this, and the importance of removing the worry the players may have about the coach's mood. And just before we go to the interview, today's podcast is brought to you by the Macquarie University Business School's MBA program. Designed to empower, challenge, and transform, the Macquarie MBA gives you the business skills and knowledge you need to succeed in an evolving global economy. The program bridges the gap between theory and real-world application, bringing together world-leading professors, executives, and industry partners to teach you how business can be used for good. I have just started working with the team at Macquarie on some projects and can attest to the quality of the people and material. To find out more, search for Macquarie University Business School's MBA. And now, please enjoy our interview with Kelly Sheffield.
You're listening to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Kelly Sheffield, good morning, my time. Good afternoon, your time. And welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast.
A great morning. It's great to be here. Well, Kelly, I feel like I'm looking in the mirror. We both have a very similar hairstyle, I see. But like you said, you've shaved today. It's great to see you on the other side of the world. And I'm really looking forward to hearing a little bit more about your program and how you've been developing it yourself as well as a coach over the years. But could I start at the start, which is the interaction you've had with some great coaches? I can see that you spent time with Barry Alvarez, Denise Vanderwaal, and of course, Steve Shondell, who I know had a big influence on you too. And I'm just wondering, Kelly, from this perspective of meeting these people and working up close with them, what do you think the great coaches do differently that sets them apart?
I'll take a step back here. I've never played a game in my life. And so when I first started, when I was first introduced to the game of volleyball, there was probably nobody that knew less than me. And I'm sure there'd be some fans that would say that's still the case, but so much of it has been picking a lot of people's brains and, just a lot of discussion, a lot of watching film, a lot of, you know, in the early days, you know, back with you throw a cassette tape into the car and listening to some different things, maybe on how to recruit or something. And I'd read an article or watch a VHS tape of coaching and just calling up those coaches and ask them great questions. And it's a, you know, I think the coaches that I look up to, the ones that I think that are really, really good, not just in volleyball, but across the board, I think that there is a curiosity that certainly I have, I've had to have. And I think a willingness from a lot of people to be able to help me along the way. I think different levels of coaching, some hats are very similar that everybody has, and then there's different hats that depending on the level. I think no matter what, you've got to be able to have a vision. I think the coaches that you spoke about, were visionaries and had a vision and an idea of where they're wanting to go. They were great at communicating what their vision was to the people around them, whether a staff or administration or the players, the recruits, their families. I think the names that you mentioned were great teachers. You know, coaching at the end of the day were teachers. And that I came from the school that I went to in college is called Ball State University, and that's a teacher's college. And so the people that were older than me that were there in this little town of Muncie, Indiana, people that went to Ball State, most of them were teachers in their careers, their 8-to-3 jobs, I guess we could say. And so when I first got around the coaches, I saw it through a teaching lens, you know, building progressions, not coaching through your personality, but actually working on the fundamentals. And I think those names that you mentioned all kind of fit into that. I think enthusiasm helps. You know, what we're doing is really, really hard. We're asking our players and our staff to do very difficult things, put a lot of work and blood and sweat and hours into it. And, you know, if you're not doing it with enthusiasm, I'm not leading with enthusiasm, it's hard for people to follow. And then I think you've got to surround yourself with great people, right? I mean, it's a people that you want to be around on a day-to-day basis, and that goes from your staff to the players. And so, we spend a ton of time with each other. We're on planes and in the gym and on buses and hotels and the office. And you have to have people around you that you enjoy being with day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year.
I'm going to talk to you about the staff choices you've made later on, but I want to pick up on this idea of you never played the game. In fact, it comes across in your other interviews, but I wanted to sort of look at it from a different angle, because I know that you helped out in camps when you were in your early teens, but you really started coaching at 19. And I'm just wondering, given that you didn't have a deep background playing, was there a person or an event that ignited this passion in you to coach?
I went away my freshman year in college to school, went back home after a year to go to the local university. And I was a runner in high school, came back, and I was coaching our junior high cross country team, and got to talking with somebody who was coaching the junior varsity volleyball team that we graduated with. And as she asked, I offered my help. I went in there, and immediately, I was an individual sport athlete, and running can be lonely, even though that you're on part of a team. It's still very much an individual sport. The team dynamics, the systems of volleyball, and then people that you could just tell were really, really good. And the teams were really good that I was watching and observing. There was so much depth to, the team sport dynamic, coaching, females as a young guy, and the techniques and the systems of play, were every single corner that I looked around was something that was so foreign and so new that it just it was a pursuit of so much. It was overflowing, of things. And so I loved just every time I thought there was so much more that I'd had no idea than the things that I did know. And that was intoxicating for me, just that learning process.
Well, you go off on this learning journey and you work your way through various roles and you end up getting your first head coaching job at the University of Albany in 2001. But that year, Kelly, the team ended the season 4-20. It wasn't a great season, but by the time you left in 2007, they of course won 3 regular seasons and 3 tournament championships. So it was a really successful period for you. And I'm keen to understand, what were the first things you did, or some of the early things you did, that really set the foundation and drove that result?
Yeah, heading into that, so I'd spent about 7 years coaching between ages 13 and 16 year olds. I did about 7 years of that, and then was that assistant coach for 4 years at 3 different universities around some really, really good coaches before, like you said, I got my first head coaching job. Our first match was in August, and then a couple weeks later, 9/11 happened, and so that kind of throws a wrench into things as well. But the program that I walked into, I'm not sure it was a job that too many people wanted. It was a job that was just making the transition from Division II to Division I. Very little support. We had 5.5 scholarships. Just about everybody else in our conference had 12. I had no assistant coaches when we started. And so which is very much similar to what you're doing as a club coach. You're doing everything yourself as a club coach or a high school coach. You're teaching and training every single position. You're not, you're inputting balls. Fundraising, if you've got a lift program, you're probably doing it yourself. I mean, just everything is, and that was kind of what year one was at the University of Albany, was everything. And, we had to get some better talent. There was no doubt about that. And, we got in there and we worked hard, and quite frankly, most of the players decided they wanted no part of that. I think we had 17 players on the roster that first season, and we were down to 3. 14 of them quit after the end of the season. None of them left the school. They all stayed there, which tells you how important volleyball was to them. They didn't go somewhere else to play. But we were able to bring some people in that were kind of saw things the same way that I did. We got a little bit of success. We went from 4-20 to 16-15 in year two, and the administration started supporting us a little bit, which allowed us to get some momentum. And we started getting a few more scholarships over time. We were able to add an assistant and then a second assistant. So you're getting more help around. There became a little bit of trust with the strength coaches. So they were eventually able to handle that. You know, the athletic department was growing. So, you know, at nights I was, you know, if the study hours were being done in my office, the first couple years that, you know, eventually you start getting some academic people in the athletic department that were able to oversee that. And so that takes a little bit off your plate, but it was everything. It was everything. Our first match, home match, we played in front of 13 fans, you know, and our last match there in the NCAA tournament was in front of 1300 fans. And so it was, you know, trying to get the local media to support, and just, it was everything. But it was awesome. You know, when you're starting to, you know, people, you start that first year, the players knew that there wasn't a lot of respect for that program around the area and within the athletic department. And a few years later, 4 years later, they win the first conference tournament, and they're the first team in the school history to ever go to the NCAA tournament. So there was just so much pride, and you're watching the players just walk around, and the day that they got their rings, and being able to show that off to the other athletes and the other sports, and it changed. You saw their grades going up. You know, their team GPAs were going up. And I think a lot of that was just, you know, the responsibility that they felt, the pride that they felt, and the confidence that just kind of came along with it. It was a great time there.
And Kelly, I read that when you're at Wisconsin now, when you went there, you took a lot of the staff from those times with you. Was that an easy decision?
So, yes and no. I was at Dayton, and one of my assistants stayed there at Dayton and took over the program. I had another assistant. Her first job, college job, was with me at Dayton. She was fresh out of college, she'd been there with me for 4 years. Brittany Dildine. And you could just see her growth during that time. She was turning into, it was very obvious she was going to be a great coach. She was just, you know, really young, probably 22 or 23 when she first got there at Dayton, maybe even younger than that. Then looked around for another assistant and realized my volunteer back at Dayton, Gary White, you know, we had a hidden gem there. He was our volunteer for 2 years, but prior to that, he was an engineer. Both their first college jobs, both were with me at Dayton. And we brought both of them there. We brought our director of operations, Jess Williams, with us. And it was one of the things that I think they all share is there's a curiosity, there's a work ethic. None of us had anything better to do early on. I mean, our joy, our passion was working and trying to be better at this. And so when you're trying to turn programs around, that certainly helps. I think everybody, it's at their heart is servant leaders. You know, it's not about them. And so I think we're going on year 11, and every one of them are still here. And all of them came with me from Dayton. We enjoy being around each other. We have a great deal of fun with each other. We very, very curious, very hungry and driven to learn more. And the roles have changed and expanded where growth can continue to happen. So it is a huge deal when you've got people that you care about and that you're able to grow with them, and it certainly makes things way easier on me now than that you have people that just they know what to do day to day and month to month.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, it's been a fantastic run. 10 years of Sweet 16s.
Yeah.
And, of course, some championships along the way. But it's interesting. I wanted to ask you what the run you've had at Wisconsin has taught you about getting teams orientated forward but not moving forward with this sense of, you know, entitlement, not expecting it, but having the humility to drive for it every season.
Mm-hmm. The teams, the businesses, the programs that I respect the most are the ones that have consistency over time, right? It's a, you know, you can name brands, whether it's athletic teams or businesses, and the ones that you're going to name are the ones that have been around for a while. And so I never wanted to be one of those programs. Probably one of the things that is just, you know, anytime that we, you win your first conference championship and it's immediately, this cannot be the only time that this happens, you know, and it's, and maybe that's, you know, I know a lot of people have that trait. I would probably say mine is just, you know, going back to a club coach and people are paying for to play, and they've got all these coaches in these big clubs, and here's this guy that never played the game. I never wanted the families, I never wanted the players to sit there and say, "My God, we're paying for this, and this guy has no idea what he's doing." And I never wanted them to feel that way. And so it was just this. You learn something, keep learning, and you accomplish something, just keep going. And, you know, I think, you know, when you talk to somebody that is a, you know, I would guess that somebody that goes out and climbs mountains, right after they climb a mountain, they're probably sitting there thinking, all right, what mountain are we going to climb next? I know we took our team to Europe a few weeks ago, and for 2 weeks we've got our team and we're traveling around Europe, playing some teams, seeing the sights and things. And we get about halfway in, and I'm talking to our tour guide about what we're going to do 4 years from now, you know, which is probably part sickness. But, you know, why can't you just enjoy what you're doing right now? Why do you got to worry about where you're going to take them next? But it's a, figuring out what is next and lining yourself up for what is next. I think that prevents you from just being satisfied. It's, the pursuit is where the fun is, where the joy is. And let's try to find bigger and gnarlier things to pursue. And you've got to communicate with everybody. You've got to communicate with your staff. You've got to communicate with your team what it is that you're trying to accomplish. And that's really, really big. If you're not a great communicator and you're just assuming that everybody knows what it is that you're trying to do, I think that's where you get issues.
Kelly, I have this interesting quote from one of your players, Danielle Hart. She says, in Kelly's mind, to be anything but honest is to not care enough about that person and their improvement. And it just jumped out at me as I was preparing for the interview, and it made me wonder, can you ever be too honest?
I think before I'm giving advice to players or other coaches or something, I think the thing that I'm asking them is, what are your goals? What are you trying to accomplish? What are you trying to get to? And I think you have to understand what it is that they're wanting before you start giving them advice a little bit. I think and then you have to be honest with them, right? If a player is trying to be a national player of the year and they're not on that path to get there, it's all hands on deck, if you will, to let them know where they're falling short on that. And anything less than that is, says that you don't care about them, right? I want to take a step back. I think players spend too much time wondering, what mood is my coach in? And I think a lot of them go to practice almost every day or every meeting, or what did I do wrong? You call a meeting, what did I do wrong? And I think that gets in the way in what we're trying to do and the relationships that we're trying to build. So I think I want there to be a consistency with how I approach things on a daily basis. The expectations don't drop. The expectations are what they are, and we're going to hold you to that. But there needs to be a consistency with how I approach every meeting, every practice. I think trust is critical. You know, trust, the players trust that I care about them, that I care deeply about them, that I care about them more as a human than I do as a volleyball player, what they can bring, you know, in the win columns. And to get that trust, there's got to be some vulnerability. You're asking your players to be vulnerable. They have to see that we're vulnerable, that we're willing to learn. But if you're asking if there's going to be trust, there's got to be honesty, every step of the way. They can't ever question that. You can't question that what I am saying is for my own good than it is for their own good. They can't question it.
Kelly, you say great teams and great athletes have an optimism about themselves, even when things get really hard. We all love optimism, but I'm wondering, how do you avoid this spilling over so that it becomes cheerleading and you perhaps lose touch with the reality of the team situation?
Yeah. I think it comes down to belief, you know, but I think, you know, when you're building blocks of it, I do think there's an optimism for what you're doing. I know our first year when we got here at Wisconsin, some of our players went to a USA tryout, and one of our assistants was with them and came back and said, you know, I really like them, but almost everything out of their mouth is negative, whether it's the weather, whether it's what somebody's wearing, whether it's what's going on in the gym or how their body feels or something. It's just this continuous loop. And we got back in the practice gym. It was spring, and I said, hey, it was at the end of one practice, and I said, you know, we'll be back here tomorrow. We've got 22 hours. And I said, gave everybody a rubber band. I had them put it around their wrist, and I said, I know this is going to be corny. I said, I get it. I understand it. Just hang with me. But for the next 22 hours, I want you to try not to say anything negative at all. And if you do, I want there to be a little reminder that you're just snapping the rubber band. And, begged them to just play this along with me for 22 hours. We get back in the gym the next day, and I said how to go. And I don't know, I had a player that said, I'm a pretty positive person. It was nothing for me. I had a couple others that said, man, I found myself snapping myself a lot. A couple others that said, I didn't know what to say. It really, really hit me because I don't want to be that type of person. And I realized I don't know what to talk about. somebody else was telling a story that they were on Twitter and they said something about the weather, and one of their teammates responded back, hashtag snap yourself. And so we just talked about, you know, if we're going to go about things, if we're going to learning and try to do things where we're passionate about coming to the gym, you know, going in the locker room, that we really need to be aware of our communication style with those around us. We've got to at least be aware of it and try to have some optimism. A couple weeks later, we're in the gym and I noticed a couple people still wearing the rubber bands. And I brought the team in. I said, what are you still wearing them? Well, we like the message that this tells, you know, it's just a reminder. Probably had a half dozen in there and said, well, I was still wearing mine until it broke. I was using it too much. And I said, well, that's, you know, that's a problem, isn't it? And so we got them more permanent ones, you know, back then, you know, everybody's got them now, says something, but back then it was just, it was a Lance Armstrong Live Strong was about the, you know, what you'd see. So we had made of that, and it was just kind of a reminder, you know, how we want to kind of go about the season, you know, optimism. I would say it's more belief. It's not cheerleading. Sometimes it can be cheerleading, but it's belief. I want our players to have what we call a bring it mentality, that no matter if you're down in a match, if you've got a tough grade in a class, you know, it's this, your strength coach is asking you to do things that you don't think you're capable of doing, just when your back is against the wall, have this mentality that says, bring it, you know, let's go set the world on fire. You know, and that's why I remember as a kid going out to the driveway with their basketball hoop and just, you know, you're counting down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then trying to get a shot up. And if you make it, then the next one, you're going to make it more difficult, or you're practicing at the free throw line and you said, hey, there's no time left and you're down by one, you hit one, you tie, you hit two, you win, and playing those little games and just how much fun that was. And I think sometimes when we get older, that becomes stress and worry and panic and shying away from those moments. And one of the things we're trying to set up with our culture is to lean in those moments and find the joy in those moments. And yes, I think there's optimism behind it. And I think there's belief. And every once in a while, there may be some cheerleading, but I don't think that's the biggest part of it.
Haley, I've watched some footage of you during the games. And what struck me was your smile. And I know that we were talking off air and you said that that was the first time you'd heard it, but it was the moment people came off the court. So yeah. People subbed out and you seemed to consciously be smiling at them. Or at least that's mm-hmm. the way it appeared in the footage. And I wanted to ask you, is that a conscious act? Is it part of your routine when people rotate, when they're potentially at a low point or a high point when they're coming off or going on?
I would say it's probably rare that I'm smiling during a match, is probably what some other people would probably say. I mean, there's every once in a while there might be that. It's I'm sure every once in a while there is some enthusiasm for what we're doing. And I would say probably every once in a while, you know, there's probably frustration that probably crosses my face at times. But I try to be very, very cognizant of what it is that's that I am, my body language, that's a you know, what message that I'm getting across. I realize that it's our team and our staff, our fans, people in the building, maybe even our opponents, I try to be aware of that. There might be some times I'm trying to let some tension out, of, you know, especially if a player is trying to do something in a really, really big moment and just misses. It was the right thought process. It was what you would want this person to do in this, and it just didn't happen. That moment is a really critical moment, especially to a young player. You know, I think about us being in a national championship match and Yulia Orzel going for a high hand shot, just looking for the hands and just missing this, just barely missing the hands and just going long and calling a timeout. Well, she was a freshman, and then, you know, she was a freshman from Poland. So she, you know, her and I didn't have a long history. And here we are playing in front of, you know, 18,000 fans in a really big moment. And not only does she miss, but I end up calling a timeout right after that. And there has to be, you know, I think right there, the human nature thing for her is to just bang her head up against the wall and just be frustrated and think that she's at fault and I shouldn't even try that and I shouldn't be doing this. I should be doing something safer. You don't want your players in that moment, in that time. And so there might be an opportunity right there to try to let just a little bit of attention out of the room. And so that might be an opportunity to try to do that, to, you know, you know, let her know life is okay. And let's reorganize and get right back at it. There's a lot of different ways that you can go about that.
Kelly, I know you have two daughters, and I know that family is important to you. And I, you know, one of the things I've noticed through interviewing coaches is that they can become quite obsessed. And I think it can be an unhealthy level of obsession that can take over. And I wanted to ask, how do you work with this to make sure that you do maintain a healthy balance in your life?
It's probably not balanced. I'm not sure that it's really any successful coach or, you know, CEO or whatever probably has what we'd call balance. The key has got to be healthy, right? It's a, you know, it's, if it was just about volleyball, it would be boring. You know, it's got to be more than that. The part that really, we're learning life lessons through sport. We're helping people at a really critical time, you know, grow and mature and get on their own and trying to accomplish big, gnarly things together. And it's just, there's so many things to learn. It's, you know, conflict management, how to communicate with people that are different from you. And we spend a ton of time in that space and, you know, and helping prepare them, whether it's a pro career, whether they're going to go get a job afterwards, how to deal with setbacks and frustrations and injuries and deaths in the family. And, you know, and you're with them for decades down the road in some cases. And so it's our family's going to be a part of that if we choose to have them a part of that. And in our family, we don't have our family and volleyball separate. It's together. Our team is over at our house quite a bit. Our staff is over at our house quite a bit. Our players, my daughters get to know the players very well. They've babysat them. They've been to their little gymnastics things when they were three. They'd go to their swim meets when they're 10. You know, it's and they get to see their idols grow, and we get to go back and we talk about the lessons of what we care about, being a great teammate. And we get to talk about working hard, of not quitting, of responding to when things happen that are favorable to you and unfavorable to you. There are so many lessons that we're able to teach them that I think it's a healthy place that most of the time we're in.
Hilly, I've heard you talk about the fact that early in your coaching career, you, quote, coached through what my goals were rather than trying to understand what their goals were. Mm-hmm. How did you change? Was there a process you went through? What drove the change in you?
Knowledge, probably. Maturity, certainly. You know, it's a I would probably say I had a lot of success around me in the sport of volleyball, even when I wasn't necessarily part of that success. And so, you know, our teams and not knowing quite how to help our team, not knowing how to help a player, wanting to compete. And so there'd probably be some times that I was, you know, it was emotion got into it more than probably what it should be. You know, if it's a, you know, go harder, pursue harder, go and get that, you know. And so there was probably early on way more times of raising my voice to try to get them to do what I was wanting that I didn't know how to communicate properly. Maybe also a touch of old watching some other types of coaches on TV of how they came across with people that were much older and thinking maybe that's how I needed to be to be an elite coach, while also knowing deep down that I've got to teach, and that inner conflict and frustration as I was just trying to learn as fast as I could to be good for my players. And so I'd be coaching through emotion a lot, way more than what I should have to get them to hopefully to go where I was wanting them to go and where they're wanting to go. I was just doing it the wrong way. You know, it's where everybody's learning as they're going. And fortunately, I had a lot of people that were able to help and quite a few people that were able to sit me down at different times and say, hey, they cared enough to say, let me help you out with this, because this may not be the path that you're wanting to be on.
Just one final question then, Kelly, if I can, and I'll preface it with another great quote I have from you. You say, I want to help our players max out their talent, max out their potential. It's really about them. How do we help them get to their dreams, their goals? So I guess the question is, in the distant future, how do you hope the people that you have helped describe your legacy?
I don't care how they describe my legacy. I care less about that. I would hope that they look back. I hope that while they're playing, that they are having a really good experience, that they know it's really hard. And sometimes we're asking them to do things that maybe they don't think they're capable of doing. But they're on this path and they understand the bigger picture, that it's that there's way more good days than bad days. They're enjoying that process. And then I hope when it's down the road that they're looking back and thought I was doing it for the right reasons, you know, along the way. I don't ever want players to feel like they're being manipulated in the moment. I don't want them to look back at their career and feel like they were a pawn in whatever it is that I was pursuing. And it has to be about what their dreams and their goals. Now, certainly we're going to, in the recruiting process, let people, this is what we're in pursuit of, And but it's a lot. It's way more discussed about what is it that we're going to do day to day. And they have a say with this. I mean, they have a say with how we're what is in our championship manual and what it is that our standards are going to be. And they have a big say into that. But once they say, here, this is what it is that we're going to try to do, and this is how we're going to go about it, and we're all in agreement, then they can't go outside of that. It's just, we're just all on this path of being able to do this. And and I think that that brings a lot of people together. We talked about trust early on. And hopefully when they look back, there's still that strong belief that we were doing the right stuff for the right reasons. We cared for each other, and there's a whole lot of lessons learned. And we help these young people grow. There's a lot of joy in that. We had an alum that came back the other day, and she's been at it for a while and brought her family, and there's just so much joy and pride from her of what she did and what she went through, and sharing that with her family and her spouse. And you want to see that joy while they're playing, and you certainly want to see that joy from them years later when they're bringing their people back.
Kelly, thank you so much for your time today. It's been great hearing a little bit more about your story and learning more about what you're doing at Wisconsin. And I wish you all the best for the season ahead.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. You have been listening to the great coach, Kelly Sheffield. I hope you got a lot out of Kelly's down-to-earth style and found a few ideas that you can bring to your own dinner table, locker room, or boardroom table for discussion. When I listened back to Kelly, the other key highlights for me were his view that the pursuit of, quote, finding bigger and gnarlier things to pursue is where the joy is, end quote. How the great coaches have a curiosity that drives their willingness to learn and fuels the vision that they have. And wanting to leave a legacy where people have had a good experience with him and had more good days than bad. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. And just before we go, if you have any feedback, then please let us know. The interaction with the people around the world who listen gives us great energy and keeps us going. All the details on how to connect with us are in the show notes or on our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.